Dad interrupted. But the point is, you have no evidence. I want to see this website. It's been taken down, Mr. Miller. It was up for approximately 4 hours. So how do you know that a crime was even committed? Numerous students printed the images. Ouch! We'd like to borrow Tyler's computer, Adams said. Why? I asked. Our experts will be able to tell if your computer was used to upload, store, or download the images. I didn't. I mean, Hannah showed me the site last night. You'll see that in the browser history. But I didn't do it. My computer will prove it. So yeah, take it. How do we know you won't set him up? Dad asked. What if you guys think he is the easiest kid to nail for this, and you'll doctor his computer to prove it? I can come back with a warrant, Adams said. This is not happening. My dad is not going toe-to-toe with a cop, defending me like he cares. I am not a suspect. Nobody did anything criminal to Bethany. In fact, the party never happened. I'll take you to his room, Dad said. I stayed on the bench while Dad supervised the removal of my computer. Mr. Benson carried it, component by component, to the squad car while Adams interviewed Hannah in her room, with Mom standing guard. Hannah was bawling. She always cried when she got caught. As Adams and Benson pulled out of the driveway, Dad watched through the living room curtains. I hadn't moved. Mom was still upstairs with Hannah, who had cranked it up to a full-blown wail. I knew what was coming. Dad snapped the curtains shut. He stood in the middle of the lemon-yellow carpet, opened his jaws, and sprayed fire everywhere. I was a loser, a liar, a jerk, an idiot, a disgrace, and an embarrassment. I'd cost the family a fortune in lawyer's fees already. I had ruined the family's good name. My father could barely hold his head up at work, and now this. Breathe, breathe. This is the last straw, Tyler. Bryce Milbury will fire me and blacken my name. I've worked 27 years to get where I am, and you just blew it all to hell because you had a hard-on for some drunken little bitch. Don't call her that, I said. Look at me when I'm talking to you. I never thought I'd say this, but I wish you took drugs. If you were high, I could blame it on that. But no. You screw up just for the joy of it. I tuned out again. He kept at it for another hour or so, flapping his wings and tearing at the sky with his talons. He was done with me. Done. If they arrested me, he'd kick me out of the house. He blamed me for Mom's migraines and his blood pressure. He blamed me for my bad grades, my bad attitude, and my bad haircut. I was also responsible for the price of gas, global warming, and the national debt. My butt fell asleep. That piano bench was hard. No wonder Hannah and I quit lessons when we were little. As he paced back and forth, I studied the family Christmas photos behind him and the spots where the wallpaper seams had separated. The furnace kicked on, blowing that faint, moldy smell across the vacuum cleaner lines at the edge of the lemon-yellow carpet, across the strings inside the piano, across the laces of my sneakers. Dad's nose twitched. He stuttered once, then shouted, "Go to your room!" I stopped in the upstairs bathroom, popped 4 ibuprofen, and chugged half a bottle of NyQuil. Then I went to bed like the bad little boy I was. 54. The sound of my parents yelling at each other woke me up at 1:30. It was an all-star cage match. Out-of-control dad man versus the gin and tonica monster. Hannah slipped into my room. I can't sleep. I wonder why, I said. It had been a long time, but we both knew the routine. I pulled out the sleeping bag from the top shelf of my closet. Hannah crawled into my bed. She had her old Raggedy Ann with her. That's the kind of thing brothers don't tell about sisters. I tucked the covers under her chin. "Thanks, Tyler," she said. "Yeah." I unrolled the sleeping bag on the floor and got in. Mom and Dad were still at it downstairs. Their vocal cords were made of leather. After a while, it faded back into a green NyQuil haze, thunder booming on the other side of a hill. "Ty?" "What?" "This is going to get better, right?" "Right," I lied. "Ty?" "I'm trying to go to sleep, Hannah." "I know you didn't do it." I rolled over. "Thanks." 55. All the crap I had endured up until then, the face flushes in middle school, the wedgies, the names, being ignored, mocked, teased, spit on, even being hurt by Bethany, that stuff was all kindergarten. This was big league. Every step in a crowded hall came with a shove, a trip, a couple of quick shots to the kidneys. By lunchtime, my notebooks were in shreds, my wallet had been stolen, and my watch was in a million pieces in the math wing. A couple teachers saw it. They saw it, and they saw nothing. I thought about walking out the front door, just walking, but that would have been a giant admission of guilt, and I was still stupid enough to think it mattered. Hannah looked me over as I sat down in the cafeteria. "That bad, huh?" "Worse." "You?" "I'm okay." Her eyes were still swollen from crying and arguing with Mom the night before. "Don't worry," Yoda said. "They'll figure out who did it, and everybody will chill." "Thank you for lying," I said. "I feel better now." "And Bethany will find out that you are not an evil, perverted stalker, and you guys can hook up again." "Are you high?" I asked him. "I'm toast. Done. Fini." Hannah dipped a carrot stick in a cup of ranch dressing. "Leave Calvin alone. He's in shock. He can't believe that Mom grounded me until graduation." "I'm not even allowed to call her," Yoda said. Hannah laid her head on his shoulder. "We'll figure something out." "Don't worry," I said. "Sneaking out to a party is nothing like committing a dozen felonies on the boss's daughter. If I get arrested, they'll forget all about grounding you." "The police won't arrest you because you didn't do it." She bit the carrot. "Stop being so negative." "I'm going to be arrested, tried, convicted, for something I didn't do. Sent to jail, where I will become the girlfriend of a large, scary man, and where I will also develop an addiction to, I don't know, sniffing bleach or something." "Sniffing bleach will kill you," Yoda pointed out. I picked up the fork from Hannah's tray. "Then sign me up. Bethany Milbury will never look at me again. In fact, she'll forget I ever existed." Hannah let out a long, dramatic sigh. Yoda and I waited. "Okay," she started. "I hate to be the one to break this to you, but my life is over?" "I know that. Thanks." "No, listen. This Bethany thing. You never had a chance." "What are you talking about?" "She likes me. Well, she liked me. Past tense." "It wouldn't have worked," Hannah explained. I tried to stab the fork into the table. "What's that supposed to mean?" Yoda shook his head a little, trying to get her to back down. She ignored him. "Bethany is popular, Ty." She said it carefully, as if I had never heard of the concept. "What's your point?" "You aren't." Yoda tried a diversion. I've never understood what makes the popular kids popular. It must be a hive activity, a neurochemical message that all hive members receive, but no one understands. We're not bees, I pointed out. It's not that complicated, Hannah said. The popular kids aren't really popular. They're obnoxiously loud, good-looking, and rich. Nobody likes them, but they rule the place. And everybody wants to be them, Yoda pointed out. Well, duh. When a non-popular kid tries to cross the line, like Ty, bad things happen. You can't mate a dog with a racehorse. Give me that fork before you hurt yourself. They talked about nothing and cuddled for the rest of the period. I drew small blue demons on my hand with a pen. Somebody poured milk down my back when we were leaving. 56. Bethany turned up in school for the first time on Friday. She was wearing her black turtleneck, tight black jeans, and new sneakers. She looked like she hadn't eaten in a month, and her eyes were swollen under the makeup. They said that her parents were forcing her to go to school as punishment for going to the Rawson party. Mr. Hughes met me at the front door and informed me that, until the matter was resolved, I'd be spending homeroom in the main office. It would be best for everyone, he said. I'm sure you understand. Chip Milbury passed me in the hall on the way to first period. He pointed to his eyes, then at me. Great. Chip was watching. Now my life was complete. Mr. Salvatore attacked me in English class. What was Dr. Faustus tempted with, Tyler? He asked. He was perched on a corner of his desk, smiling like he gave a damn. I don't know. What was the author, Marlowe, trying to tell us? To pay attention in English class? A few people giggled. Salvatore stood up. Did you read last night's assignment? Why was he always doing that? Say yes, and I'd be hammered again. Say no, and the same thing would happen. I shrugged. Did anyone read last night's assignment? Everyone who was not me raised their hands. Someone please summarize Dr. Faustus for us, he said. As a girl sitting by the window explained, Mr. Salvatore took a book from his desk, opened it, and set it on my desk. He patted me on the shoulder twice and went to the board where he started scribbling. I tried to read, but the letters kept moving around. I stopped at my locker after English. Mistake. Something accidentally hit me on the right side of the head. It felt like the bumper of a pickup truck. Nobody saw anything. The nurse gave me ice and called Mr. Hughes. An hour later, he joined me in the nurse's office and told me that I would be spending the rest of the day in study hall. He had already talked to my parents. They would be coming to school for a meeting on Monday. If I hadn't been so tired, I might have said something. I went to the study hall room and laid my head down on my books. A trickle of water leaked from the ice bag and escaped down the back of my neck. As the day wore on, the room filled with bees and emptied. First buzzing, then silence. Buzzing, silence. As the members of the hive flew through their rigid, patterned dances. The sound of their beating wings filled my mind and smothered it. When I finally woke up, the room was empty except for Joe the janitor, leaning against a mop and giving me the evil eye. Hey, I said. Did I miss the bell? Did you do what they say you did? He asked. No. He examined the end of the mop for splinters. I didn't think so, he finally said. Keep your chin up. I laid my head back down until I heard him leave the room. 57. After dinner that night, we drove to the photography studio for our annual Christmas photo. We did not talk in the car. Mr. Gunnarsson had a giant mirror on one wall of his studio. Mom dug a brush out of her purse and handed it to me without a word. After I brushed my hair, she handed me my brown felt antlers. I put them on. Mom and Hannah wore antlers too, along with the stoned reindeer sweatshirts. I wore a red sweater. Dad was in his suit. He refused to wear antlers, or even a Santa hat. He held the prop, an empty box covered with red and green wrapping paper, while sitting in the leather armchair in front of the fake fireplace. A plastic tree poked up at the back of the shot. We all gathered around Dad, Mom to his right, Hannah to the left, me behind the chair. "No, no, no," Gunnarsson scolded me. "Your head is too far off the ground. I can't get it in the frame. Let's try something else." 4 something elses later, we found the right combination. Mom perched lightly on the arm of the chair, Hannah hanging over the back, and me down on one knee to the left, like someone had just been injured on a soccer field. Dad held the empty present in his lap. "Very festive," Gunnarsson said, clicking away. "Say peace. That's it. Big smiles. Peace." 58. Dad woke me up at 7 o'clock Saturday morning. "No sleeping in," he said. "I have chores for you." It didn't take too long to climb the ladder and step onto the roof. I planted my butt on the shingles and inched my way up to the peak. An ugly-looking cloud bank was building in the west. The air smelled like winter. The mail truck was coming down the street, dodging potholes. Our neighbors on either side, we never talked to them, had above-ground pools half-filled with stagnant water. The sidewalk in front of our house was more cracked than I remembered. I shuffled my boots back and forth on a loose shingle. I studied the Christmas lights that I was supposed to replace. Mom had tried to yank them down, but they wouldn't budge. From up here, the problem was obvious. After Dad looped the wires over nails he had driven into the roof, he had bent the nails over so that the lights wouldn't blow down in a strong wind, which is why he hadn't taken them down himself. Good idea, bad execution, difficult cleanup job. Story of his life. And I had forgotten to bring up a pair of pliers or a claw hammer. Bad idea, no preparation, giant mess. Story of my life. Dad came out of the house, shielded his eyes from the sun, and looked up at me.
"How long will it take? I need you to help me down here."
"I need a pair of pliers."
"You didn't bring them up with you?"
"Hold on."
It only took him a second to find them, and he was back out of the garage. He stood below me.
"Catch."
"No, wait." The pliers bounced off the roof, hit the gutter, and dropped back to the ground. "I'll come down," I said. "I have to go to the bathroom anyway."
"No, no, you stay put. I'll bring them up."
Dad stuck the pliers in his back pocket, pushed up his sleeves, and blew out a sharp blast of air as he put his hand on a rung above his head.
"Want me to hold it?" I asked. "I'm fine."
He climbed 5 feet off the ground, pulled out the pliers, and held them up.
"If you lean down, you should be able to reach them."
I stretched on my stomach, toes dug in for grip, but he was too far away. "You have to come up a couple more rungs at least, Dad, or I can come down the ladder." He frowned, but he put the pliers back in his pocket and climbed, one shaky step after the next. "Lean your weight towards the house," I suggested. He didn't say anything, but he leaned and climbed 3 more rungs until his head popped over the edge of the roof. There was sweat coating his upper lip, and he was breathing like he just ran the 400.
"Didn't think I could do it, did you?"
He held on to the ladder with a death grip, reached into his pocket in slow motion, then handed the pliers to me.
"Thanks," I said. Don't mention it. He glanced around.
I forgot how nice the view is from up here. A man should climb on his roof more often.
Yeah.
Indeed.
He nodded like we were having an everyday conversation. Just two regular guys.